Love Talk Radio.
Heart Talk with Miss E. We are still celebrating and acknowledging the National Child Abuse Prevention Month for the month of April. And we're also celebrating National Poetry Month. And I thought this was would be the most appropriate time to have our guest for this evening. She is someone that I've come to know as having as big a heart as mine in terms of caring for the children, but she also possesses a gift that just totally just warms my heart, as my son would say. And so we felt that this would be the time. I know she joined us as a call-in on one of our calls probably about this time last year, and it's amazing to see how quickly time has gone. But our guest this evening is Ms. Cheryl Nix. Cheryl is a native of New Orleans, Louisiana. She is a published poet, an author of an Amazon number one best-selling book. She is my sister in the Les Brown Platinum Speakers Network, and she utilizes her personal experience of triumph over the poverty, substance abuse, and domestic abuse which plagued her childhood environment. She uses that to inspire others to take steps towards a life of meaning, purpose, and service. In addition to all of that, she is also a certified psychotherapist and a neonatal nurse practitioner. She is dedicated to serving our youth. Welcome, Cheryl.
Good evening, everybody. Thank you, Ms. E, for that introduction.
Yes, and it's one that I feel from the heart because I know all of the many areas that you cover. I know that what your passion is, and it's so exciting to know someone who is moving forward towards her vision for the young people. And I had the opportunity to be the recipient of one of your beautiful poetic writings during the time a time when I was having a very low moment, and it just brought tears to my eyes and washed away some of the sadness that was in my heart on that day, and I want to thank you for that. But I'm also grateful for tonight's call because we're talking about the healing properties of poetry. And God knows this week I have it's only Tuesday. And my heart needs healing. It has been a rough few days, actually, carry over from last week. But we know that healing, poetry, has some healing components to it. So I wanted to ask you, how and when did your love for poetry begin?
I think my love for poetry began as a teenager. I wanted to escape some of the things that were going on around me, and I just started putting pen to the paper and rhyming words and took it from there and just started writing poetry.
Wow. Now, did you also read a lot of poetry?
Yes. I was always intrigued by words that rhymed, and, yes, I was always reading poetry, and I read more of it than I wrote. but I would write for special occasions, for friends, for birthdays and things like that.
Wow. Do you remember the first poem that you wrote?
No, I do not remember the first one.
Do you remember the reaction you got?
Go ahead.
Pardon me?
No, I said that was a while back, Miss E, but
okay. But do you remember the reaction of someone when you read some of your poetry to them at a younger age? Because we know what it's been like lately, but what do you remember? Were you nervous about letting people hear? Because I know that writers, poets are sometimes a little cautious and hesitant about sharing what I call their babies, because this is something that comes from within you, and sometimes it's a little awkward to share it with someone else. Do you recall what that might have been like?
It wasn't awkward because I usually wrote for a particular person, so it had to do with something about their personality, the essence of who they were. So, you know, I didn't worry about somebody feeling that because I felt it was, you know, written specifically for that person. And like I said, I did it mostly for special occasions, weddings and birthdays.
Well, it was a gift from you. It was a gift that you gave from your heart to others.
Yeah.
And you said it was also something that helped you to escape a lot of the things that were going on around you. How would you describe the environment?
Well, my childhood environment, first of all, I am the oldest of five children. By age 22, my mother had five babies, and my dad was a janitor with a ninth grade education. And my childhood environment consisted of alcoholism, domestic abuse, street fights, and street drugs. So to escape some of that, I was always a loner. I was not a child who liked to hang out. I liked to sit inside and write or sometimes play in the yard with the boys, but most times I'd like to just sit around and write.
Okay, so you learned real early that the comfort from that inward peace, finding that peace within.
Yeah.
Wonderful. And that's unfortunately sometimes as adults, but even as our young people, a lot of times they're not really tapped into that. We're finding that a little bit more with our spoken word artists and our young people coming up today, and I'm hoping that they will find the peace and their calling within as you have. Well, one of your poems, one of the first poems that I heard you read, of course, it just resonated within me so much, and I always say, I want you to read my poem, and you're saying, what poem? But I think we finally got the title of it, and it's entitled
Our Future is in Our Youth.
Yes. So that's my special request. So would you be so kind as to share that with our listeners this evening?
Yes, and this poem is my signature poem. I wrote this poem, and just the words just came to me. Our future is in our youth, and I don't have to read it. I know it, Miss E. This is coming from my heart.
All right.
Yeah. As a nurse practitioner, I receive newborn babies into the world. Some are little boys, and some are little girls. Some are big and strong and look so grand, and some are so very tiny they can fit in the palm of my hand. Some go to homes where they're pampered, nurtured, and loved, and some go to homes where they're cursed at, abused, and shoved. They soon become what we call those lost violent teens, but many of them are only emulating what they have seen. Don't judge them by their clothes or their hair, because deep down inside they're crying, will somebody please care? In order for a boy to be a man, he has to constantly see a man. Are you willing to extend him your helping hand? Each one teach one is what my license plate says, and many of them can be saved with some love and some praise.
Yes.
How many more have to be murdered or sutured? Our youth may be 40% of our population, but they're 100% our future. I invite you to reach out and touch a child. I guarantee it will be worth your while. I just pick up the phone and say you matter and interrupt some of their negative inner chatter. And just know that your job is done. If you save only one, only one.
Woo, I got goose pimples every time I hear that, because that is so, so true. And I know that you believe it as much as I do. And a lot of times when I'm going to, you know, share something with someone, or even, you know, with other speakers, and say, okay, she's talking about adopting a kid again. And it's not so much adopting, it's about just giving attention and giving the love. And I love how you go through the life phases. You know, there's some start off small and weak, and they go and look for that. Some are going to go to homes where they're pampered. Others may not, and the environment that they'll go to. And sometimes it's just a matter of giving a compliment or calling and say you matter to interrupt that chatter. That's my favorite line in it. Oh, my gosh. My gosh. It just touches. And I can't see why, how someone could listen to that and not be moved just to do one thing, is as you say, to do for one child. And I believe if we do for one child, that one child would do for another child, and they carry that through adulthood. That is just beautiful. That is beautiful. I think, and what I was saying to you, I felt bad because I haven't gotten the book yet. And you said, well, that one isn't even in the book. It's like, okay. So I now remember I also asked you, could I post that somewhere on our website? And I know that a lot of people were asking for it, and you needed to get it copyrighted. So I strongly encourage you, and I'm requesting whatever format it is in now to be made available to the public. I would love to be able to obtain that. I really do. That is just beautiful.
Okay,
I need to take a breath. I should have had you to do that one last, because
I started to suggest that, but we have to go with the flow. But you may have a copy of it. I've had so many requests for that poem. It has been copyrighted, so.
That is just beautiful. Yeah. And maybe we'll just read it at the end again, because I don't think it can be stated too many times, because that's a call to the village.
Yeah.
So tell us about your passion for young people. How does that come about?
I believe that it is in my DNA. From my grandmother, it is. My grandmother, my mother. I lived with my grandmother for the first 13 years of my life, and my grandmother's house was like the neighborhood house. Everybody flocked to my grandmother's house if they needed to eat or whatever, or needed to take a bath or whatever. My grandmother invited everybody in. I mean, there were young ladies would leave their babies at our house, take off for weeks, days and weeks, and, you know, so we always had all of these babies and children in the house, in the yard all the time, and so it's in my DNA.
And so even within that family, I would say even the legacy, it was about taking care of the children in the village, about being the village. So you were brought up in the village, being the village.
Yes, yes.
Wow. And even in that, I'm sure you saw a lot of what you've, you know, mentioned about, well, you've already mentioned some would leave them for days and weeks, you know, which is a form of abuse, which is neglect. However, fortunately, they place the children in the whole care of someone who they knew would be taking good care of them, but to be gone for days on end, I'm sure that could have had a strong impact on the young children who were left behind. Go ahead.
I say the kids were always happy, so.
So you became their family.
Yes.
Right. So did you have any thoughts, you know, as a young person, even at the age of 13, of what you wanted to do as an adult?
Well, I used to say I wanted to have about 12 children, but as I grew up and found my mind, that quickly changed.
You changed your mind. When you found your mind, you changed it.
Yeah.
Okay. So So you yeah. knew that you wanted to be around children, whatever you did, and you thought you wanted to have that many of your own.
Go ahead.
So from there, okay. when you found your mind, you decided.
Yes, and I've always loved babies and children. Like I said, it's in my DNA. And I had a dream of becoming a nurse because I wanted to take care of babies and children. And I accomplished the dream. And for many, 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 many years, I have been taking care of babies and children. And I'm still, to this day, as a neonatal nurse practitioner, taking care of sick and premature babies.
Wow. You know, it's interesting because I really didn't know that piece of information about you, because growing up, I was actually an only child for most of my developmental years, and I always wanted to have a lot of children, always wanted to be around kids and babies, and wanted to be a pediatrician until I found my grades. No, actually, I had the opportunity immediately out of high school to work in a pediatric office. And what I realized, there was a lot more emotional pain going on than the physical within the families. And so in college, I did different internships, but I still wanted to be around the children. So that's interesting that we both had sort of that similar desire, even as a young child. And I haven't gotten to do much of the babies. I've dealt with all of the big babies. And I'm now reaching that point in my life where I just say I want to travel around the world and hug babies, and I think that's going to be the next phase of my my work here.
So I'm sure,
as you indicated, even in your poem about when you see young babies come into the world, how does that impact your vision for our young people and your heart as you see children coming into the world? What are some of the experiences that have grabbed your heart the most?
The experiences that grabbed me the most are the tiny babies, the one-pound babies who are coming into the world with so many odds against them, and to see these little babies do well and go home in about 3 to 4 months is, you know, my reward.
Wow.
And then, go ahead.
These premature babies who, either just because of their mother's inability to carry them full term, and I guess sometimes because of substance abuse or other matters of the mother not having the appropriate gestational environment for the child?
Yes, we've seen, you still there?
Mm-hmm.
Since Hurricane Katrina, we've seen a drastic increase in illegal drug use among our pregnant moms. So, cocaine and marijuana, heroin, and the moms who are trying to kick their heroin addiction are on methadone. So, an increase since Katrina. And so these babies are coming into the world already addicted to drugs. We don't know the long-term effect of, you know, this on the baby. Some studies suggest that they may have learning disabilities and things like that. But the heroin and methadone withdrawals are, you know, are really rough on the babies, and sometimes they're hospitalized for a couple of months as we wean them and get them through this crisis.
You know, it's interesting because I just attended an international roundtable on minimizing trauma to children, you know, pre-birth, during birth, and after birth. And I had not really given a lot of thought, because the children that I've worked with primarily, you know, are in foster care who've experienced a lot of trauma throughout, you know, their childhood, not even thinking about what type of trauma could have even occurred, except for cases like where there's fetal alcohol syndrome, you know, or what people call, you know, the crack babies. But not thinking just all that they go through, even just physically, even at birth, to be a survivor in the midst of everything. So when you're talking about these children coming in here, you know, substance, you know, addicted already and having to be taken care of at so much a more intense level, what do you see when you see that child survive?
Well, first, I'm glad you mentioned alcoholism because we tend to not lump that in when we talk about drug abuse, but alcohol has more of a dangerous effect on a developing fetus than, you know, sometimes cocaine.
Mm.
So I'm glad you mentioned alcoholism because most people don't think about alcohol being a drug.
Mm-hmm. It's just a legal drug.
Yes. So what I think about is looking at the total picture of, you know, the child, the mother dealing with her, you know, her struggles and her pain, and having to bring a baby home and, you know, the social environment, and it's just so, you know, multifaceted. It's no easy answer or no one answer to, you know, to the problem.
So the work that they do with the infants when they come in, you know, we talk about this being Child Abuse Prevention Month. And I'm looking at, it's like you have to start pretty early to prevent abuse when it starts in the womb. So already when the child comes into the world, you're already doing intervention because the abuse has already occurred. Right. So, but what measures do you see it gives you a sense of reward that you're able to intervene to prevent further abuse in that situation?
Well, we get social services involved and try to give the mother resources to help her, you know, because she can't help her baby until she gets herself straight. But they're here in Louisiana and the New Orleans area, they're constantly cutting psychiatric beds and facilities, and there's very little support here for these babies. So, you know, we just have to do the best we can with the few social workers and the few agencies that are here to help us and to help these moms and babies.
Wow. Now, and the other question that I that came to me earlier today is that being that I work with foster care, how many of their infants do you see going directly into foster care from the hospital?
We don't see a whole lot going into foster care because they really try to place the infant with a family member if the mother really isn't able to care for it. They try to keep the mom and babe together if possible, but if not, they try to place the baby with a family member. So it's not a whole lot of them here going into foster care, but sometimes, yeah, there are some.
And do you see a high incidence of teen moms?
Yes. The youngest I've seen was 11 years old.
That's not even a teen.
Yeah.
So she's barely a tween. Wow.
Yes.
Now, and I'm not sure because you probably don't have any contact with them prior to, because I'm wondering if the treating physician, if the child had any prenatal care, did they, well, of course, I would assume that it would be assessed for that being an abuse situation, because another 11-year-old is not capable of impregnating, another 11-year-old. So
yeah, most times it's an abuse situation when they're that young.
So when how long do you work with a child or a child and mother when once, because you're there during the delivery, during the labor and the delivery and the aftercare, how long do you work with the families?
It depends on how early the baby's born. A 1-pound baby could stay in our unit for 3-4 months before it's big enough to. And I say it because I call all my little babies my little it's nothing negative, you know, that's my little baby. Mm-hmm. But sometimes 3 to 4 months we're dealing with the baby and the mother.
So you get to maintain care of and overseeing the care of the child while as long as the child is hospitalized.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. I don't know if I ever told you. Did I tell you that I was a little it too?
No.
Both my sister and I were little its, but she was a little smaller it than me. I came in at probably at 7 months, and I weighed 4 pounds even, so I think I stayed in the hospital a month. And my sister came in at 2 pounds, 7 ounces and stayed in for 3 months.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're quite familiar with little its, little special its.
Yeah.
Wow, that's
little,
amazing.
Those little strong-willed personality people, yeah, they're amazing.
Yeah, and speaking of that, so you're talking about that beyond the physical level, do you really believe that there is something that's extraordinary about a child who survives when coming through that? Do you believe that there's something, you know, some people say, you know, it's an old soul or, you know, a determined spirit or, you know, it's a spirit that the child has come here with a purpose. Can you sense that when you're caring for some of the little ones?
Yes, some of them are really sick and we, you know, we think, okay, we don't know, you know, if they're going to do good, if they're going to make it or not. And some of them, they just keep fighting, you know, you come back the next day and they're kicking around and moving around and, like, I'm not going anywhere, you know. So, yeah, some of them come with that personality, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm reminded of a story called Your Song, a child song by Alan Cohen, and it talks about singing a song to a child when the mother is pregnant and singing that song to the child when it's born and throughout life, and whenever that child alters away from what is believed to be, you know, its purpose, his or her purpose, singing that song as a reminder. And I was just thinking about how awesome would it be even to be able to share with a child, to have them to know that they were strong from birth, that they survived this, and how that spirit could remain with them throughout life, no matter what. You've come through this, you know, like Les Brown always says, you know, out of so many different, you know, number, you know, a sperm, you know, your egg was the one that, you know, came into the world fighting to be here. And it just occurred to me what that might be like as a message to a young person. You went through all of this to survive. You can't give up now.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing, coming into the world fighting. So speaking of fighting, you talked about the impact of Hurricane Katrina, even, you know, with the incidents of substance abuse, with the incidents of low birth weight babies and premature babies. In talking about how the power of healing that poetry has, you had shared with me about an experience that you had and working with a group of teenagers and young people following the hurricane and how powerful that was. Can you share that with us, please?
Yes. As a speaker, I love speaking to youth. So I speak to youth wherever they are, at church, at youth camp, in the neighborhood, or wherever. And I was noticing after Katrina, this anger and hurt, pain and sadness. So I had some high school students to put their feelings into poems and to write poems surrounding their feelings. And the poems were, the anger came out and the hurt and the pain and the fear. And it was a great experience because they were able to finally release and to put on paper a lot of the things they had bottled up inside of them. Mm-hmm. So the poetry was healing and cathartic for them.
And so did they actually read the poetry themselves?
No, they didn't read it. I was compiling it and trying to get permission to put it into a book and make them authors. You know, this was my dream and my big idea, and, you know, I needed permission from the parents, and it was hard trying to get all of that done and get enough people to give me permission to publish them. So I still have them, and something's going to become of these poems. But
definitely, most definitely. And one of the things that I think is also very powerful, you know, once they get it out, but then to verbalize it, to give voice to that pain and the anger, because, it, like you said, it has to be released somewhere. What did you notice in their faces, in their tone of voice, or in their body language as they worked on the poetry?
Anger, tension, fear. But after they, like I said, put their words out, it was like a release. You know, finally, I've, you know, been able to say what I wanted to say for a long time. Finally, I've been able to get this out of my system, out of, you know, my body. And and then, you know, and I know it's going to be a journey, that one poem isn't, but that was a start for them.
And you never know how much that may have given them a release as an option when they're going through other situations in life, or as they continue to deal with this one situation. And as we talked about, that particular case may or may not have been around a case of physical abuse or sexual abuse that we would look at as the acute situation that a child is dealing with. But then for some, you never know. It could have just been compounded by, you know, the natural tragedy of the hurricane. But also, when you really look at it, it was a form, the way that the whole situation was handled was a form of societal abuse. Basically, society continued to abuse them by neglecting, ignoring, and them being forced to continue to move throughout their grief and not have a safe place to be able to embrace all of that and to express it, because oppression is a form of abuse. Repression is a form of abuse. So we have to look at abuse as not only being something that's physical, or someone hitting you, or someone violating you physically. There are many other areas of abuse. So basically, everyone was traumatized from this tragedy, and further traumatized by not being treated as human beings. So
yes.
And we all handle our stress differently. So no telling what other things children were predisposed to as a result of that. So, but I know giving them a key, giving them a tool to work with. So you have another poem that you had mentioned about leaving the past behind.
Yeah,
would you share that with us, please?
Yes, this poem is called "Your Past Doesn't Equal Your Future."
Okay.
In search of our identity, sometimes we go back far, but where we come from isn't necessarily who we are. Knowing where you've been shapes what you believe. It's best to focus on where you're going and what you can achieve. The things you focus on will expand. When others see you moving forward, they'll lend a helping hand. No matter the circumstances of your past, into the future, you decide what to cast. But if it doesn't serve you, let it stay back, because right now you're on the fast track. Steps to grow by. I invite you to say, today I let go of any experience that won't help me to grow. I will look to my past only if it builds me up. I'm moving forward, and that I won't disrupt.
Hello.
Be thankful for all that you've been through. all of it has had a part in shaping you. Yeah. And that's from one of the poems from my poetry book.
Yeah, speaking of your book, would you tell our listeners the title of your book? I sort of took a little, what do you call it? I sort of used part of your title, but anyway, tell the listeners the title of your book.
The title of my book is Poems for the Heart, with Steps to Grow By, and it's a book of inspirational poems, and each poem gives steps for personal growth. The book is also on CD.
Yeah.
A song composed especially for each poem.
Oh, that's awesome. Adding another component to it, the musical element. Awesome.
Yeah.
And where can people purchase that, find and purchase that?
They can purchase it from my website, Cheryl, C-H-E-R-Y-L, Nix, N-I-C-K-S, Enterprises, ENTERPRISES.com. Cheryl Nix Enterprises.com.
Awesome. You know, and the point that you just read, it's for our young people, but it's for all of us. It's for all of us as we go through trials and tribulations, setbacks, knockdowns, comebacks. It's about using what serves you, and I think that is just—it's so necessary. So it's so necessary.
Yeah.
So you've spoken to the village, you've spoken to the children in the village, and the inner child of the village. Let's move ahead and talk about what it was like. Who were the elders and the poets in your village when you were coming up?
I don't really remember any poets in the village. The elders were my grandmother, my mother. They were a big influence on my life.
Mm-hmm.
But surprisingly, also poetry must be in my DNA, because I just learned about 2 years ago that my mother used to read and write poetry.
Mm-hmm.
And when she was a young girl, and I just, through casual conversation with her, found that out and tried to get her to remember some of the poems she had written, but she couldn't remember the poems. And so 50 years ago, she was doing what I'm doing now.
Wow.
But it was a sign that, okay, it's time to write my poetry book. And 3 months later, my book was complete.
Amazing. What was her reaction to your writing your book?
Well, the book was dedicated to her, and I don't know if she was in shock or not when I presented it to her, but then she went into telling us the stories, you know, how, you know, when you're a kid, you want to sit at your mama's feet and listen to the stories. Mama, tell me a story when you were a little girl. And she started telling all these stories. So, yeah, it was amazing.
Wow. And just to know that that is something, and the fact that you're able to live out the legacy of the family just by living your own dream is something, excuse me, that she probably only dreamt of, if she even, excuse me, ever dreamt of being able to write a book, but especially, you know, in sharing her poetry. So I'm sure that was a real, you know, blessing to her heart to be able to see that. And for you, I think it gave you that push, that launch that you needed. And I asked you, had you ever gone away from your poetry? You said you never had really gone away, but I think something triggered your really getting serious about it, even just about the same time that you had spoken with your mom.
Yes. I started incorporating poetry into my speaking. And I would get these great reviews, and people would tell me how my speech came alive when I incorporated the poetry and how powerful the poem was. So I started paying attention to that. And so I'm like, okay, this is probably what I'm supposed to be doing full time. And then shortly after, I had that conversation with my mother, and I'm like, okay, this is it.
Okay.
I have to complete my book. This is it, yes.
My heart speaks. I'm following my heart.
Yes.
Yes, and I just saw just a whole another depth of Cheryl come out when you started doing your poetry. It was like this was your, you know, it's like this is your language. This is your.
Yes.
You know, some of us, you know, are musicians. Some of us are writers. Some of us are instrumentalists, singers.
Right.
But yours came through as your poetry. That is just it speaks for itself. It speaks for itself. It is definitely heartfelt. So when you're working in the village, you're dealing with, you know, all these children out, you know, in the community. You changed your mind about having 12 children. So how many biological children did you have?
I have three daughters.
Three daughters, okay. And then as you continued to move, you ended up, as I said, you brought the village home. which is one of the sections in my book. This is like, you know, working in the village and then bringing the village home, embracing the village and, you know, putting it under the same roof. So tell us about that as a relatively new experience for you.
Yes, I have embraced a teen family member, a young lady, into my home, brought her into my home, and it has been a new experience, a great experience, but to see her grow, and she's had little bouts in foster care, but to see her grow and smile and just a totally different child, all of the teachers are bragging on her and can't believe that she's the same child, and it has been a very rewarding experience. So, yes, so now I have Four daughters.
Isn't that amazing?
Wow.
And
yes.
I always say that, I jokingly say about, you know, social workers, anyone else who works with children as a profession, people will even ask me, they say, well, do you have children at home? I say, well, not anymore. They'll say, that's why you love them so much. But I believe when you love them so much that you can work with them and you come home and you have them there too, that's a real, very strong connection right there. That's passion and compassion. Yes.
Yeah.
So I know that is just, as you say, it's been a joyful experience for you in watching her grow. And I'm sure that there, you know, have probably been some things that you've needed to rearrange in your life. But it sounded like things just flowed in how they needed to happen. Did you have any hesitation about extending your family?
Not at all. The only scary thing is the homework. I don't remember. I don't remember. I cannot help with math and homework.
Oh, gosh. You might have to go for tutoring yourself to be able to understand for her, huh?
I have to rely on the younger family members, yes.
Yes, 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 yes. So in your new daughter, what do you see? Do you see a part of yourself in her?
I think she kind of looks like me.
I think so, too. I saw a picture of her, and I think I said that. But I'm wondering in terms of herself emotionally, you know, and how she's handled, because I'm sure that there have been things that she has been exposed to and has to endure that she would probably need an escape. And you talked about yourself and doing your poetry was a way that you dealt with everything. Have you observed how she's managed to compensate for, as I say, the madness in her life and to be able to find that place within herself?
Yes. she loves to dance, and I love to dance also. So, yeah.
All right.
Yes.
Another form of expression. All right.
Yes.
That's good. That is good. And I think when we're talking about the gifts that our young people have, sometimes they're so dormant, and we're so quick to say, you know, well, they don't have any gifts. They don't have any skills. They don't have any talents. They don't have any interests. And all we have to do is take some time to listen, observe, and bring a sense of warmth and safety, because I believe when something is warmed, it's incubated, as we talk about with the babies, anything that's incubated will come, will live. So that is just beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. And how old is she?
17.
She's 17, so she's a real teenager. But that's a blessing. And I, you know, want in every one of our programs, I want to encourage both our young people as well as the adults. For our young people, the message is to never give up. If you feel that life has dealt you a bad hand and that you'll never have the parenting or the love or the understanding or the support that you believe that you deserve, never, ever give up. Here at 17 years of age, this young lady has found a safe place has found her and is embracing her and helping her to discover her gifts and her talents and who she really is on the inside, and it's taking great joy in doing so. And for our caregivers, my statement is to never give up, never give up. And I would also say be willing to take a stance, because a lot of times we hesitate and say, well, I would, but, and there are all of these excuses, and some of them are very valid, I will say, some valid reasons, but to believe if you're really following your heart and you're connected to your source of life, you will have the resources that you need to provide. And I know that you've even talked about some things, Cheryl, about schooling and the location of schools and how things just sort of fell into place that didn't require as much going back and forth as you thought it was going to be.
Yeah, yes. Yes, everything is working out good. Yeah, a lot of family support, and it's been a good experience for me.
Wonderful. For other relative caregivers and other, I guess, foster parents, et cetera, what would you say to people in their circle? What is the best way they can be of support to someone who has extended their family by bringing in a child or a teenager? What has been the best source of support for you?
My own kids and just everybody, sisters, sister-in-law, brothers, brother-in-law. I mean, it's been a family affair.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of the things they've actually done that a neighbor or a friend or another family member can do? What are some of the things? Because people always think they have to do the big things, and sometimes it's just the small things and that relieve some of your stress and anxiety. What are some of the things that they have done that the village, if they're not taking care of the child, that they can do to support a caregiver?
Help with homework, chauffeuring a child.
Mm-hmm.
Things, just little things like that, they can do, you know, without having to take a child into your home.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and as I recall, you know, for myself having been a single parent, you know, there was also, you know, and the children were in two different schools, two different sets of activities, so I did a lot of going back and forth, you're trying to pick up, and then if I couldn't get to one place by the time, you know, one after-school program closed, I was stressed out. It's like if I just had someone that could pick them up, so I tell the child to walk home and walk this way, so when I can get to you, you know, I'll get you, and that's a lot of stress for someone to take on, you know, not to mention, you know, when you start talking about homework, which is an issue with one of my young ones, too. And, you know, and then some of the basically the behavioral and attitude things, you know, and not necessarily just their attitude. Sometimes it's our own attitudes. So, yeah, just that support for someone to just help take on some of the load. And my biggest thing is everybody can be a part. Everybody can take some time in the village to be able to be of help. And I want to be able to get that out. Respite care is a real big one, you know, just for, you know, a few hours or overnight or something in order for you to do your job or to have some me time. That's all very important. That's all very, very important. So we have 10 minutes left in this interview. There was the only thing that we did not really talk about more so before we open up to our callers and see if there are any comments in the chat room. Well, we talked about prevention and intervention. I know that you have started in, as a part of Cheryl Nix Enterprises, a foundation there in rebuilding the community in New Orleans. And tell us a little bit about what your vision is for that and how you see its role as both being a preventionary and an intervention type program.
Yes, my foundation is Nix International Community Foundation, a 501c3 nonprofit organization whose vision and mission is rebuilding communities from the youth up. And it's about empowering the youth and leading to empowerment of the total community. Because like I say in my poem, our future is in our youth.
Yes, yes. So knowing that on one level you'll be doing a lot of intervention, but I also see it as a prevention for some of the younger children that may not have to experience some of the same things that others who didn't have in their earlier development the resources that you'll be providing through your foundation. Would you say that's accurate?
Yes, that is accurate. Yes. Giving children a place to go, a voice, expressing themselves creatively through art, spoken word, poetry, music, dance, however they can express themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Just giving them a voice and changing their mindsets and empowering them.
Right. And as a certified therapist, do you utilize actual one-on-one therapy for your kids?
No, I don't really. Well, not professionally, but I'm always talking and guiding, and I stay in therapy mode when I'm talking with them. So. Yes.
Yes, yes. Sometimes people call it an occupational hazard, but I think when you have a heart for healing and a heart for seeing the best in someone, it's not even about the occupation. And I often tell people is that I didn't choose this occupation. This occupation chose me because I was doing this long before I got a paper. And it's just a sense of caring, just having a sense of caring. So before we go to see if any of our listeners, I see a couple of people hung up. They might have thought I was going to call on them. Before we call and see if anyone has comments or questions, do you have another poem that you would like to read from your book, Poems for the Heart?
Yes, I do. Okay. I was debating on two poems. I really would like to share the poem I wrote for my mother.
I love that. Yes.
Yes. Because I want to dedicate this to all of the mothers, the foster mothers, the guardians, aunts, nieces, cousins, all of the women that help to take care of the children in the village.
Okay.
And this is my... Yes, my poem I wrote to my mother. It's called Profile of a One. Dear mother, you wrote that poem over 50 years ago. The words you no longer know. You passed your love of poetry to me through my DNA. Mother, please hear what I have to say.
Mm-hmm.
Your childhood was filled with struggle and strife. You had such a hard life. As a young age, you had five little ones, three daughters and two sons. You never drank or smoked. To your children, you were always yoked.
Mm-hmm.
I loved the way you combed my hair. You kept us clean even when the cupboards were bare. You pinched pennies so that we could eat. Many nights, your stomach empty, you went to sleep. You had to walk me 2 miles to and from school when it was hot and when it was cool. You wanted us to have more than you had, and when you couldn't buy us things, it made you sad. You took care of other people's children, too, because that's what a real woman would do. You encouraged us to get an education because you knew that would be our salvation. When I look in the mirror, I see parts of you. I'm a beautiful, loving, giving woman because of you. Mother dear, I often smile. I'm so proud to carry your profile.
Beautiful, beautiful. And wouldn't that be just an honor for any woman to hear, you know, even just the fact of the honor to carry your profile. There's a scripture that says, you know, a woman is blessed by her children shall rise up and call her blessed. So that is just beautiful. Awesome, awesome.
Thank you.
I love it.
Thank you. Actually,
when we go through and see how many people have comments or questions, we might still have a time for you to do that other poem that you were debating about. So we can do it all. I've always been the type of person that says, why do I have to choose? I want it all. So, and there's nothing wrong with that unless, you know, like I said, the selfish isn't negative. It only has a negative connotation if you're getting what you want at the expense of someone else's well-being. And so here, since this is our time, our call, our program, we're not taking it at the expense of anyone. So we're going to give it all to have it all. Is that okay?
Yes.
Okay. Let's see. We have a couple of people in the chat room that are actually a guest. I see one name, so I'm going to see if that person has anything they want to say. And I'm just going to go through the list here and pop in one person at a time and ask if anyone has anything to say. So let's see. I'll just say the last two digits of your phone number, and if that is you, you can let me know what you would have to say. So the person that's been holding on for the longest, last two digits are 52. Are you on the line, and would you like to speak to our guest this evening? Oh, I guess I have to mute it, huh? Hello, good evening. Thank you for calling Heart Talk with Miss E. Would you like to speak to or ask questions of our guest this evening?
Well, this is Shella's sister, Sheila, and I just want to say I am so proud of her, and I just want to thank God for her for being my oldest sister.
Oh,
I was 6 years old, and she's today, but I stand up tonight just to give her praise. Thank God for her for being my sister.
Awesome.
Thank you. That's my baby sister.
Thank you.
You know, I'm over here melting. Thank you for checking in with us. I hope you've enjoyed the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Last two digits, 17, 1417. Would you like to have words or comments or questions for our guests? Hello, 1417.
You can stay in to me.
Okay, thank you. I'll come back. 0363, do you have any words to share with our guests this evening? I think people are probably like me. They put it on hold, on mute, so they can listen and just let's take it all in. I just don't want anyone to miss an opportunity. There's probably somewhere way on here that people can actually hold their hands up. I haven't figured that out yet. Let's see. 7286.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm fantastic. I'm Diana Krekus. I'm the Take Action Life Coach. I think what she said was so beautiful and so inspiring. Oh, my God, that was gorgeous. That
Thank
really
you.
Was, and so from the heart. I'm telling you, if a child of mine said something like that, wow. I mean, that really is awesome. And my business partner mentioned that you're a nurse, that you were down in Katrina. Am I mistaken, or is that what, was he,
well,
did he get it
you
right?
You are
or?
Correct. You are correct.
Okay, because I'm a nurse, too. I've been a nurse 28 years, so, oh, my God. Thank you. Thank you for helping the people down there, Katrina. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes.
Wow. Well, thank you for calling in. Where are you located?
I'm located in Howell, New Jersey. And it's just, you know, what she has written, what you've done, I'm telling you, Miss E, it's beautiful. And please continue writing, because that is your gift, and that's your passion. Just please keep doing it, because that's God's gift through you. And people need to hear it. People need to hear what you have to say. So please continue doing that. That is beautiful. You know, keep being blessed. That's gorgeous.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
For the words of encouragement. And Cheryl is the poet, so I'm the host. I write, but my poetry hasn't become that evolved yet. Everyone, every now and then. So please go and leave us a note, either on Facebook or at our email, to let us know what your thoughts are about the program. And please join us again. I'd be interested in hearing
Thank
more
you.
About Take Action.
No problem. Thank you.
All right.
I will.
Thank you. Okay, it's interesting because the numbers are starting to shift, so I don't know if they're not going in order anymore. They're jumping around.
Uh-huh.
So I'm just going to open up everybody's line, and anyone who has something to share, unless you have some background noise, I'm just going to leave it open. Does anyone else have any questions or comments for Cheryl? The lines are open.
Yes. Can you guys hear me?
Yes,
yeah.
We can.
Yeah, my name is Lydia Lagarde. I am Cheryl's aunt. And Cheryl, I want you to know that I am so very proud of you.
Thank
it was
you,
a struggle.
Aunt Lydia.
She came through a big struggle in her life. I was there, and she made it. She made it, and I am so proud of her. I am
Thank
so
you.
Very proud of her. I say I'm her only aunt, but I'm not really, but I'm claiming to be the only one. I love
Thank
you, Cheryl,
you.
And I'm very proud of you, sweetie.
Thank you so much, Aunt Lydia.
See, that's what we're talking about. Family, village,
yes.
Coming together. Beautiful.
Yes.
Let me see what's going on in the chat room. Does anyone else have any questions or comments? Actually, the call line
yes.
is filled. Yes. Go ahead.
Yes.
Yes, I had something to say.
Okay, who's calling?
Well, this is Lacey. This would be Cheryl's baby girl.
Oh.
Hey, Lacey. So, hello, good evening. And I would really love for everybody to know about my mother is that she is truly like an angel. She is what I like to call the epitome of fighting
mm-hmm.
for your dreams. She has taught me that it's not just okay to dream, that it's necessary to do so. And then it's also necessary to fight to pursue that dream just as much as you do to even conceive it. She has taught me that much. And only maybe a year and a half ago, she wrote and published that book. And she was an inspiration for me to quit my regular job and pursue acting, my lifelong dream, full time. And I've been successful at that because she had the courage to pursue her dream. So I love you, Mommy. I love
Thank
that you dream.
You.
I love that you pursue your dreams. And then you teach the rest of us that it's okay to do so.
Oh, my baby. Thank you, Lacey. Love me, my lovey.
Beautiful. I think we're going to come back and do this as a repeat for Mother's Day. better make sure the tears off my cheeks. It's okay, the cheeks, just don't want it to run out my nose. Beautiful. Thank you for so much for sharing those words of appreciation and adoration for your mom. The only person in the chat room that can actually say something that doesn't have just a guest number is Gigi, and I'm not sure who Gigi is, but Gigi,
yes,
if you have
I'm
any...
actually here.
Oh, somebody has technology savvy. Could be in the chat room and on the line. Hi, Gigi.
Hello, good evening, everyone. I am very, very excited that I was able to get on the call this evening and listen to both of you wonderful ladies being more of an inspiration into my life. I'm actually Miss Cheryl's, one of her oldest daughters, well, her middle daughter, Tia's best friend. I say best friend, but that's
my other new adopted daughter.
Right. And, I mean, by way of just being a fabulous friend that her daughter has been to my life over the past, I would say, 4 years, meeting her mom and just being touched by her presence. You know, having people come into your life at just any given time, I feel like that's way of God's way of just blessing you in so many ways that sometimes you have to stand back and say, wow, am I really worth all of this? Thank you. And when I talk to, you know, Miss Cheryl in my time of need or just being a young person, you know, pursuing my own ambitions, my own dreams, and then being around other people of like-mindedness, mm-hmm. I find it fantastic. And then the fact that she didn't let age stop her, she didn't let, you know, circumstances stop her, like her daughter was saying, Lacey, I mean, it makes you push and think to yourself, you know, I'm using those battles as my guard. I'm like, okay, I got to use it to pursue and keep moving forward. And mm-hmm. while you all were speaking on the call tonight, it just, I was reading and listening at the same time, and I read a quote that was posted by, I believe it's Till Harper, and
mm-hmm.
it's actually
mm-hmm.
quoted from Mahatma Gandhi, and it says, happiness is when what you think, what you say, and what you do are in harmony. And I think of Miss Cheryl in that manner, because what she says and what she thinks at this point in her life and moving forward is in harmony, and I believe all of us are trying to reach that. So from my heart to everyone out there, Michelle, I am so blessed and pleased that I have someone like you that God has brought into my world on my team. That just makes me a stronger individual to, you know, to move forward in my life. I do.
Thank you, Gigi. Love you.
Yes, ma'am. Love you as well.
Thank you so much for being present and just sharing. Now, see, that to me, it's poetry in itself. You know, that's poetry because they're words that bring soothing and warmth and encouragement. Thank you for that. And then, is your heart just swollen right now, Cheryl?
Fighting the tears.
Oh, tears are good. Tears are good. They're cleansing.
Yeah.
Wow. So this is the last opportunity before I shut the mics off for anyone who has anything else they want to say, because these numbers have gotten all jumbled up here. Cheryl, I have to make sure I don't cut you off. What's your last two numbers?
Wait, I have to write it down. You know, I can't think
of my...
Okay. 6-3.
Okay, I'll just know not to shut that one off. Okay, I'm closing the lines. And Cheryl, would you like to read us one more poem before we end the call?
Okay. I will read this one. And this can be for anybody, any age group. It's called True Friend. People come into your life for a day or a season, but a true friend comes and stays for a reason. Someone you can talk to, someone in whom to confide, someone you can complain to when your last nerve has been tried. A true friend won't judge you or talk behind your back, because they understand that sacred pact. They encourage you to continue to grow. They will be honest when you ask, should I let go? even when they see some crazy things that you do, they will continue to stand by you. When you call them because you've had a scare, you know that they'll be there. You know how much they care. Steps to grow by. Look at all of the people who always need you. Look closer at the ones around when you need someone too. When you are down on your luck, many leave as fast as the wind. The ones who stay are your true friends.
Awesome. Beautiful. And I'm so pleased to be able to call you my friend, my platinum sister. And actually, I remember the first day that we met, Dr. Julie came and brought us together, said, you two have to meet. You two have
meet. Yes, I remember that. Yeah.
Okay, Cheryl, are you there? Hello? Are you there?
heavenly mother crying, these are children are dying at the hands of the other child.
Hello?
I know her heart is breaking, feel the earth is shaking, that rivers flow from the tears she cries. She cries.